Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me, Philippa Hitchin, on this edition of our English feature program. Coming up in just a few moments, 1 year to go, a look at preparations underway for World Youth Day to be held in Sydney, Australia in July 2008. And on the front lines of the fight against human trafficking, how the church is working on prevention and rehabilitation for victims in Nepal. Welcome to the program.
The next World Youth Day will take place in Sydney, Australia.
Cologne, Germany, 2005. On a pilgrimage to celebrate World Youth Day in his home country, the recently elected Pope Benedict XVI announced that the next such gathering of young Catholics would take place in Sydney, Australia. Since then, the Church Down Under has been busy preparing for over 500,000 people who are expected to attend World Youth Day 2008.
The young people, I want to encourage you to prepare well for this marvelous celebration of the feast, which will be spent in the company of your bishops, priests, religious, youth leaders, and one another. Enter fully into the life of your parishes and participate enthusiastically in diocesan and events. In this way, you will be equipped spiritually to experience new depths of understanding of all that we believe when we gather in Sydney next July.
Those were Pope Benedict's words to young people gathered here in the Vatican recently, and Catholic dioceses across Australia have been taking those instructions very seriously indeed. The World Youth Day celebrations culminate in Sydney from the 15th to the 20th of July 2008, but for the 5 days leading up to that, Catholic parishes, schools and many other diocesan organisations across the country will be welcoming young pilgrims to Australia, showing them something of the history, culture and vibrant faith life of the young church there. As the largest Catholic diocese in Australia, Melbourne is planning a full programme of events from July 10th to 14th, entitled Days in the Diocese. And if you click on their website, didoh.com, this is the kind of welcome you'll find.
Welcome to Melbourne. This is our city and our home, and we're here to invite you all to come and start your journey to World Youth Day 2008 right here with us in Melbourne.
In the build-up to World Youth Day 2008, the Melbourne Days in the Diocese is celebrating with an exciting 5-day program with lots of amazing things for you to see and do.
Melbourne's the second biggest city in Australia after Sydney, and there's nowhere else quite like it. It's famous for shopping, eating, fashion, the arts, beautiful buildings and interesting people. So come and be a part of it all. Melbourne's a real melting pot of many cultures and many faiths. It is also Australia's largest Catholic archdiocese. And if there's one thing we all have in common, it's this. We all love our sport.
Well, one former sportsman and teacher who is now helping to organise these Melbourne Days in the Diocese is Tim Davis. He dropped by our studios here at Vatican Radio recently to tell me more about how these ambitious World Youth Day preparations are shaping up.
With the World Youth Days being held in Sydney, we've been asked by the organisers from Sydney's end whether we would support them by providing hospitality and accommodation for pilgrims on their way to Sydney. And as Melbourne is the biggest archdiocese in Australia, we were asked to take on a lot of the pilgrims. And being the city that it is, Melbourne is a very proud event city and loves hosting people and the Australian hospitality. And so we're inviting as many pilgrims as possible to come from all over the world on their way to Sydney and stay with us for a week. The week will involve obviously a time for preparation for the World Youth Day, so time for prayer and some catechesis just within small groups. But it's more about the hospitality and the opportunity to see the living church in action in our diocese.
The Archdiocese of Melbourne wishes to offer the warmest of welcomes and hospitality to all pilgrims travelling onward to Sydney. For those of you living in the diocese, As Chief Pilgrim, I invite you to join me on the journey to Sydney to World Youth Day 2008. World Youth Day is a gift to the Church of Australia, and on your return, I encourage you to take the opportunity to share this gift and continue to be a witness to Christ.
Archbishop Dennis Hart of Melbourne there. Tim, you're expecting up to 100,000 people from abroad, aren't you? I mean, that's quite a daunting figure, even for a city that is used to organising events on a scale of this kind.
Yeah, well, I guess we're expecting probably not all of those will come through Melbourne. They'll be spread around the various dioceses all over Australia, but a large proportion will come to us in Melbourne. And yeah, with our numbers, I guess, we're looking to host as many as possible. So around 25,000 to 30,000 we're anticipating.
So where are you going to put them all? With host families, I presume?
Yeah, it's a good question. We've decided to really focus on staying with families from our parishes and from our schools. We have a very big Catholic education system, and so that's a good resource to draw on as well. But in speaking to many people who have been to various World Youth Days, one of the best aspects has been the days in the diocese, which lead into the actual World Youth Day celebrations, because it's an opportunity to actually connect with people from a different culture, a different country, and actually live with them for 5 days and get to know the mundane, the daily life, which we think ourselves is our boring part of our life. But for international people, it can be very interesting and helps people to understand different cultures and their faith life and how that's developed and sustained.
So you're talking about chances for prayer together, some catechetical things. What about in terms of really teaching people about the church in Melbourne? What are you hoping to show them?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not anticipating that this will be a mini version of the World Youth Day. It's quite different. Basically, we're hoping to, if you can imagine, a group comes to us from Korea, and we house them in a parish or a cluster of parishes, depending on the size of the group. And then we would hope that in the morning they would meet with other parishioners and their group at a local church, celebrate Mass or a prayer service. And then from then, there are opportunities to be involved in various activities, which include a festival of music and cultural exchange, the opportunity to visit a place like the Tarawarra Abbey, where the Cistercian monks live, to do a pilgrimage walk following Blessed Mary MacKillop, who's we're hoping will be Australia's first saint. So there's a variety of things. Then in the afternoons, on our travels around the world, we've tried to make contact with key leaders in the church, cardinals, bishops, and key lay leaders, to hopefully give a bit of an insight into areas of their interest. For example, Cardinal Oscar Rodriguez from Honduras is bringing a group from Honduras, and he'll be speaking on one of the afternoons. We're hoping that Marianne Glendon will be able to come down and speak, being in Pontifical Council for the Laity and being head of law at Harvard and her interests there. Cardinal Napier coming from South Africa and speaking on issues of racism and the apartheid era that they experienced in South Africa and how that country is moving on. So just a bit of a sprinkling of people from all over the universal church.
To give a real flavour of, as you say, the universality of the church.
Yeah, and for more specifically in Australia, I mean, I think people are interested in, we don't have the religious history that Europe holds, you know, but I guess we want to expose people to aspects such as the Aboriginal culture, sort of the pioneering and missionary Catholics and Christians of our time in Australia as well, and see what they've done and how far they've come in just 200 years, really, just over 200 years.
It all sounds very exciting. There's a major problem, seems to me, and that is cost. If you're talking about young people coming from Latin America, from Africa, how can they afford the journey to Australia?
Yeah, that's something that we've really tried to address, and it's been very important to us, because we don't want this to be an event just for the wealthy Catholics of this world or from Western countries. And so part of the fee, registration fee, is going to a solidarity fund, which will mainly focus on the Pacific region, because it's been unattainable for the Pacific region to be able to get to Europe most of the time because of the expense. So we think that while we have this celebration in Australia, it's a good chance to give them an opportunity to come. Also, it's been really impressive to see the approach of our parishes and schools, who've just decided we want to sponsor people from certain countries One school is called Nazareth College, and so they would like to sponsor a couple of people from young people from the Holy Land to come. And then Brother Mark, who is the executive officer, has been also approaching businesses and business people, and there's been some generous responses with some people offering to support young people who would not normally be able to afford to come down and experience it with us. So
this is going to cost you as a diocese quite something too, but I understand the state is supporting you as well.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate in Australia that, and particularly in Victoria, where our state government are sharing in the costs with the church. It's interesting, the state government take a lot of pride in being a bit of an event state. We have the Grand Prix and the Australian Tennis Open, and we hosted the Commonwealth Games last year and the Olympics way back in 56. So even if the church wanted to make a mistake, the government won't let us do it. So, yeah, which is, it's great to have that support, because it gives us extra confidence and gives us, provides us with people who have logistical expertise and to make it as smooth an event as possible.
And it does sound as though things are going ahead fairly smoothly. There must be, I imagine, though, people who are dreading the disruption to daily life, aren't there? Some killjoys who are really dreading this as an event, an invasion of people.
I think so. I mean, with any element, with any event, you're going to get an element of people who are not going to agree with what's happening or mightn't see the benefits. But I think it's it's like I think it was described as a slow-moving steamroller that is just going to gradually build momentum. And I think what often happens and has happened in other cities is that people haven't really known what to expect, but then all of a sudden the enthusiasm builds and they see the streets filled with young people enthusiastic about their faith, about Christ, and singing and talking, and they start to ask themselves, where have these people come from? What are they so happy for? What, you know, and it's really infectious. And we're very sure that as things build up and as the public become aware, secular public within Melbourne, they'll get on board and be very supportive and enthusiastic.
Because the Catholic Church in Australia is not so big in numbers, is it? I mean, what is this event going to mean for non-Catholic young people, non-Christian young people?
Yeah, well, I guess when we talk about the particularly the days in the diocese and the World Youth Days, it's unashamedly Catholic, but it's open to all. So we're looking for opportunities where we can involve people of other Christian faiths as well. And so we have an ecumenical prayer service we're holding one day, will be one of the activities. And so we're very keen to engage other Christians. I think we're about 26%, 27% Catholic in Melbourne particularly. But it's a great opportunity for evangelization and re-evangelization of, as in most of the Western world, we seem to lose, that demographic of young people between the ages of about 15, 16, and then some of them don't re-engage until later on in life. And so it's about us reaching out to those people through secular media as well. And we're hopeful that this event, this gathering, will be a bit of a stimulus for those people or an avenue for them to come back and get involved with their faith.
You've already got a very attractive website, haven't you, working on this outreach, as you say, to people who may not normally be engaged with the church.
Yeah, we've had some really good people involved in our office in Melbourne who have set up the website, and that's going to be our major portal for delivering information and communicating with people. And then there's a few other initiatives that we're developing too in terms of, you know, Facebook and MySpace and other avenues which young people are engaged in.
You've also got somebody called Father Stan Fortuna, who is obviously attracting, reaching out on the musical front.
Yeah, that was great. We worked him very hard when he came to Australia, Father Stan. He was just sort of like a bit of a taste of things to come. And it was great, the effort he put in. He travelled to most of the major cities in Australia, and I know I looked after him for basically 2 days, and he did about 12 radio and television interviews and a couple of concerts. And yeah, it was good. I'd never met him or really heard much about him before that, but we had a concert in Melbourne which was very successful, and a lot of young people came along.
Music is a great gift from God, and it's a powerful, powerful means to communicate and transmit both good and evil. Just like the media, there's a lot of cameras that's showing bad things, but that's not going to stop us from using it for the glory of God. And the same with music, all types of music, all genres of music, even rap music. Ain't nobody like a Catholic party, cause a Catholic party don't stop. We on a first name basis in heavenly places. Like every family, we put names on the basis. The house is big, plenty of spaces. Got all kinds of jacks, kings, queens, and aces.
Franciscan Father Stan Fortuna there, who's been involved in the build-up to World Youth Day 2008. Tim, what has it meant for you personally to be involved in organising an event like this?
It's been an interesting experience. I've really enjoyed it. I'm from a teaching background, so I was teaching phys ed in a school for children with behavioural difficulties and social difficulties. And so I was sort of plucked from this. I'd been involved with some social justice festivals that had been run in Australia, but I'd always wanted to be involved with organising a World Youth Day and was so excited when it was coming to Australia. And so I jumped at the opportunity when I got offered a role. And it's been, for me, particularly in my job travelling around the world, to see the Universal Church. That's been very moving. And it's not so much about the places I've visited, but the people I've met from all corners of the earth. And to have that common faith and that common purpose has been really inspiring. So it's been great for me in that respect.
You say you're from a teaching background, but you're actually a bit of a sportsman, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I did. I played Australian rules football.
Can you explain that in one sentence to our listeners who don't know what Australian rules football is?
Australian rules football is a combination between rugby, Gaelic football and soccer or European football. It's quite rough for the uneducated eye. It's no padding and a lot of body contact. But we're hoping to give visitors who come to Melbourne a good opportunity to go and watch a few games and make up their mind for themselves. They might think Australians are a bit crazy after watching a few of these games. Come together
to improve our lives. What can I say? We wish you all the very best in this initiative and
thank you very
forward
much
to hearing more about it as the months go by. So.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Tim Davis there, one of the organisers of the Days in the Diocese for Melbourne leading up to the World Youth Day in Sydney, July 2008. Lord, I know you hear us. Trafficking in human beings is the third most profitable crime worldwide after drugs and weapons smuggling. It's a growing phenomenon and is being facilitated by globalization and modern technologies. The United States government estimates that 600 to 800,000 men, women and children are trafficked across international borders each year. Approximately 80% of victims are women and girls, and up to half of them are minors. However, these numbers do not include millions of victims around the world who are trafficked within their own national borders. In Asia, thousands of Nepalese girls are trafficked each year into the red light districts in the cities of India. Others end up in countries in the Asian Pacific region, or even as far afield as the Gulf States. My colleague Susie Hodges has been finding out more about their plight and how the Catholic Church is trying to help.
Campaigners estimate there are around 200,000 Nepalese women and girls presently working in Indian brothels. Some of them are as young as 9 or 10. The girls are sold by poor village parents or sometimes even their own husbands. Others are tricked into fraudulent marriages or promised employment in the capital, Kathmandu, only to find themselves enslaved as prostitutes in India. Caritas Nepal is at the forefront of awareness campaigns to warn girls and their families about the traffickers and provide rehabilitation to girls who manage to escape or who are rescued from the brothels. Rai Rupa is head of the women's desk at Caritas Nepal, and she told me more about the extent of the trafficking problem in her country and the suffering of its victims.
It is estimated that about from 5,000 to 7,000 young girls and women are sold for flesh trade to India every year.
Is it a growing trade?
Now it is a growing trade and a new way, because at the beginning it used to be only to India, but now it has spread out in other Arabian countries, Gulf countries.
Presumably here it must be much easier to try and prevent people getting trafficked in the first place, make them aware of the dangers. Mm-hmm. How is Caritas involved in this?
Yeah, because Caritas Nepal is focusing on preventive actions. That's why we organize awareness program for the community people in the grassroots level. We also organize awareness program for the school students, especially for the youths. And we have radio program. Through Radio Nepal, we broadcast awareness orientation sessions, like we provide them what is the issue and what are the causes of this issue. And we also provide them case study of the survivors, those who have come back from the brothels. So in that way, we try to aware the people. We cannot reach everywhere. That's why in the all parts of our country, so that's why we use radio. We have radio program, and we have also developed different materials like posters, and we have information kit that we distribute in the schools when we organize our awareness sessions. And we also organize awareness sessions for health workers, because when the girls were rescued from the brothels of India, we had to take them to the hospital, and the doctors and nurses, when they came to know that they have come back from the brothels, they did not want to treat them, they didn't want to touch them. So that was very bitter experience for us. And those girls who have come back from the brothels, they asked Caritas Nepal to organize awareness program for them. Now we are organizing this regular awareness program for the health workers also. And we also tell about the causes, and we also tell the stories of the girls. And as resource person, we take the survivors. Those who have come back from the brothels, they become our resource persons.
The victims of the traffickers in Nepal often come from poor rural areas where the female population is largely illiterate and where girls are traditionally valued less than boys. Rupa says these attitudes, plus poverty and ignorance, help explain why so many girls from these areas fall victim to the traffickers.
Yeah, Nepal is a very poor country, as you know, and these girls are from the very poorest families. And some of the girls are the age of 14, and we have a study done in the brothels. So from the age of 9 years, the girls are sold.
And are they sold by their families? Are they tricked by friends of the families? Or are they kidnapped?
In a way, they are sold by families, but the families, they don't know whether they are taken to the brothels, because they are promised by the pimps that they will be taken to Kathmandu, the capital city of Nepal. So they don't know whether they are in Nepal or they are in India, because as Nepalese people, we don't need any visa to go to India, and we have open border.
So the parents are often being told these girls have been taken to be waitresses or clean a house.
Household work, and to work in the carpet factories. So that they can get money, mm-hmm. and they also get food and shelter.
The vast majority of girls in Nepal who fall into the clutches of the traffickers are sold to brothels to work as sex slaves. But Rupa says some of the girls do end up working as domestic servants in appalling conditions. And she points out that even young boys sometimes end up as victims of the traffickers.
Most of them are in the brothels, but some of them, they end up in the household work in different parts of the country.
And how are they treated there?
It's not guaranteed, because some of the people are treated well, but they have to work from morning till midnight. So how can we say that they are treated well? Not only girls, the boys are also sold for the circus. So they take the boys also.
And what age are these boys?
Oh, they are from the age of 7 to 15.
So, very young boys.
Very, very young boys. And we have seen the marks of their beatings, beaten by the masters, circus masters, in the rehabilitation centers.
The lucky girls either are rescued by police from the brothels or manage to escape. But their problems do not end there, as sometimes their families do not want them back at first, especially if they are HIV positive. And, as we heard earlier, they are often ostracised or scorned by the rest of society, like the doctors who did not want to touch the girls who had been rescued from the brothel. Rupa actually visited a number of brothels in India to talk directly to some of the Nepalese girls trapped there as prostitutes. Let's hear her account.
I had visited one of the brothels in Bombay, mm-hmm. so I met about 57 Nepali women.
And what were the conditions like there?
They were telling us it was very bad, yeah, because they had to tolerate about 25 men at a night. And one of the women was Tamang from the Hading of Kathmandu, and she had a child, and she was taken there by her own husband. Can you imagine that? And along with the child, she was also forced to take her younger sister. So all the three people were sold by her own husband.
And did this woman get out from the brothel? Were you able to rescue her, or is she still there?
No, she's still there, because it takes a long process, and we have to communicate with the government.
In addition to their psychological trauma, the girls who escape or who do manage to be rescued often bear lasting physical damage from their experience as a sex slave. Rupa told me about one such girl rehabilitated by Caritas, who later found she was unable to bear children.
One girl is there who was also married. She also got this rehabilitation, all the services in the rehabilitation center. And now she also got married with a good person. He knows me. We know him. But what happened after getting married, she could not conceive the child because she was in the brothel for more than 5 years. So sometimes she becomes very helpless and very frustrated because she can't bear the child.
And this, the fact that she's unable to conceive is because of, you know, the fact that she was injured during the course of her work.
There was some gynecology problem. That is another sad story for us.
But let's end with the inspirational story of another rescued girl who underwent rehabilitation with Caritas Nepal. A story whose happy ending proves that despite undergoing such appalling abuse and suffering, these victims of the people traffickers can recover and lead normal lives.
One of the girls, she was studying in the school, but she was betrayed by her own uncle. He had taken her to Kathmandu by saying that she would have a better study in the school. According to her, on the way to Kathmandu, she was raped by her own uncle. Then that person, he sold her to in one of the brothels in India. But luckily, by the help of three girls in brothels, she could run away from the brothel and she was rehabilitated. And at the beginning, she did not want to talk to anybody. She hated the people like anything. And especially with the male persons, she did not want to talk to. And she did not trust anybody also. But later on, when we had counseling, literacy program, different skill programs, and now she is married and she has a girl child. So they come to meet us in Caritas Nepal, and it gives us great satisfaction.
Thanks to Susie Hodges talking there to Rai Rupa of Caritas Nepal. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme of Vatican Radio. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can. And don't forget, you can always find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. Once again, that's www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, do stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.